All right, let's dive into a fascinating area of law today, architectural copyright.
We've got a case that's, well, it's a head-scratcher for sure. Can you actually force someone to tear down a house if it was built with stolen plans, that is?
It's a really interesting clash between tangible and intellectual property, and the Fourth Circuit had to grapple with that very question.
So this case, it's Christopher Phelps & Associates versus Galloway Phelps. They designed a custom home. It's called the Bridgeford Residence.
And Galloway, well, he seemed to take inspiration a little too far.
Yeah, inspiration might be putting it lightly.
It wasn't just a matter of borrowing an idea here or there. He essentially lifted the entire design, almost a replica.
Oh, wow. And he even, get this, he even hired some of the same subcontractors who work on the original Bridgeford Residence.
Adding insult to injury, right. It really points to blatant copying. But the key issue here is that Phelps, they hold the copyright for the entire Bridgeford design, not just little bits and pieces.
So it's not like, I don't know, like copywriting a guitar riff, it's the whole song. Exactly. The court was very clear about that. Architectural copyright, it protects the overall form, the arrangement, the composition, the whole thing.
So you can imagine what happened when Phelps found out what Galloway was doing.
Oh.
Construction, it stopped, lawyers got involved, and things got messy. But here's the thing. Galloway's house was already more than halfway built when the cease and desist arrived.
Talk about a tough situation. So the case goes to trial. Jury finds Galloway liable. Copyright infringement.
No surprise there, it sounds like.
They awarded Phelps $20,000 in actual damages, essentially what Phelps would usually charge for those plans.
So a financial hit. But what about the house itself? Did they make him, you know, demolish his half-built dream home?
That's where it gets interesting. Phelps wanted more than just money. They wanted that house gone. They asked for an injunction, either to tear it down or to prevent Galloway from selling it.
I bet that was stressful for Galloway, having his future, you know, potentially bulldozed.
Absolutely. But the district court, they actually sided with Galloway on the injunction. They said the $20,000 was enough to make things right.
Hold on. So they let him keep the house, even though it was basically built on stolen blueprints.
Well, not so fast. Phelps and Associates, they weren't satisfied. They appealed.
Of course. Always an appeal.
They had three main issues. They felt a jury instruction was messed up. They had concerns about some of the evidence. And the big one, that denied injunction.
Okay, let's break those down. What was wrong with the jury instruction?
It had to do with how the court explained derivative works. They made it sound like Phelps's copyright was based on something else instead of being, you know, original. Imagine saying a cover song has more rights than the original.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
Right. The Fourth Circuit agreed it was an error, but they ultimately said it didn't affect the big picture. The jury still saw the value in Phelps's entire design.
Okay, one down, two to go. What about the evidence? What was the issue there?
Phelps and Associates, they didn't like that Galloway's financial records were allowed. And the property's tax assessment, they said those weren't relevant to copyright.
Why would those even come up in a copyright case? Seems strange.
Well, the court said those records, they were relevant to figure out Galloway's profits from the infringing house, which the jury actually found to be zero. It's a good reminder, though, documenting damages, it's crucial.
So even with no profits, the evidence was still allowed. That's a tough one.
The law can be tricky like that. But let's get to the core of the appeal, the really juicy part, that injunction. Should the court have made Galloway demolish his half-built house?
Yes. Back to that big question, what did the Fourth Circuit have to say?
They brought up this big case, eBay versus Merck Exchange. It established a huge principle. In copyright cases, there's no automatic assumption of irreparable harm.
Meaning what? You don't automatically get an injunction just because someone copied.
Exactly. You have to show specific harm. And in Galloway's case, the Fourth Circuit agreed with the lower court. Blocking the sale of the house, that was too much. But, and here's where things take a turn. They sent the case back to the district court, specifically to address the infringing plans themselves.
Wait, I'm sensing a loophole here. What's so important about the plans?
That's the hidden gem of this whole case. While they said no to tearing down the house, they left open the possibility of ordering Galloway to destroy or return the copied blueprints. Huge difference.
So he might get to keep the house, but lose the blueprint it's based on. Sounds almost like a, I don't know, symbolic punishment or something.
It's more than symbolic. If the court goes that route, they could actually prevent future infringement by dealing with the root cause, those copied plans.
Wow. This is way more complex than I thought going in. It's not just about this one house. It's about setting a precedent for how we deal with architectural copyright in the real world.
You got it. And this whole idea of impounding those infringing copies, it comes from Section 503B of copyright law. It's a powerful tool that's often overlooked.
This case is so interesting. I never knew architecture could be so legally dramatic.
And we're just getting started. This case has so many layers, and we've only just scratched the surface.
Before we go any further, let's take a breather. Let's unpack what we've learned so far and what it all means. For architects, for homeowners, for anyone dreaming of building their own place, stay tuned. We're back and still untangling this case. Christopher Phelps and Associates versus Galloway. It's really making us think about architectural copyright in a whole new way. It's almost like, you know, trying to separate the design from the actual house.
It highlights a big challenge in copyright law. When you have a physical building and an idea, how do those two things interact?
So for all the architects listening, what's the big lesson here? Should they be, you know, rushing to copyright every sketch they make?
Well, this case definitely shows how important it is to protect your intellectual property early and often. Register those designs. It's worth noting, though, this all happened before VAR, the Visual Artists' Rights Act.
VARA, right. That would add another layer of complexity to this whole thing.
For sure. But even with VARA, Phelps versus Galloway shows that there are limits to what the law can do. You might not always be able to get an order to tear down a building, even if it infringes on copyright.
Yeah, I see what you mean. So let's look at this from the other side. What about Galloway? What can homeowners or people thinking about building learn from all this?
Do your homework. Before you even start thinking about construction, make sure you know where your plans came from. A $20,000 licensing fee, it might seem like a lot, but it's nothing compared to a demolition order. Or legal fees, those can get into the hundreds of thousands.
Ouch, that's a painful lesson to learn. A reminder that the law can be, well, it can be expensive.
This case really shows how courts struggle with intellectual property rights when it comes to physical spaces, especially homes.
You mentioned earlier that the remand, the one about the plans, was a sleeper issue. Can you explain that a bit more?
Think about it. If the court tells Galloway to destroy or give back the plans, he can't ever use them to build again. That's a big deal. It goes way beyond the initial, you know, infringement.
So it's not just about punishment. It's about preventing future problems.
Exactly. That's where Section 503B of the Copyright Act comes into play. It lets courts take those infringing copies and stop the problem right at the source.
It's almost like dealing with weeds. You pull them out of the root, not just trim the leaves.
Exactly. And it raises another interesting question. What if Galloway had finished the house before Phelps and Associates caught on? Would things have been different?
Oh, good point. Would they still be able to order the demolition of a finished house, maybe with people living in it?
That's when things get really murky. It becomes about balancing fairness. Yeah. On one hand, you have the architect and their right to protect their work. On the other hand, you have the homeowner, their investment, their lives.
Sounds like an ethical dilemma, too. Tearing down someone's home, that's a big deal, even if they technically broke the law.
No doubt. It's not a decision any court would make lightly. They would have to consider a lot of factors.
Like what? What could Galloway have argued to try and save his house?
He could say he didn't know about the copyright, especially if he got the plans from someone else. He could also argue that demolition would be a huge hardship, financially, emotionally.
Those arguments would probably be even stronger if the house was finished, right? With people living there.
Definitely. Once people are living in a house, it becomes more than just bricks and mortar. It's a home.
So the court would have to think about the impact on his family, potential financial losses, all the disruption.
Absolutely. And weigh that against the harm to the architect. It's a complicated equation with no easy answers.
It sounds like there's no clear-cut answer in a case like this.
You're right. The outcome would depend on so many things. The specifics of the case, the arguments, the judge's interpretation, the law isn't always black and white.
It makes you wonder if there's any way to prevent this kind of situation in the first place.
That's the key question. It all comes back to education and awareness. Architects need to be proactive, protecting their designs. And homeowners, they need to be careful, make sure their building plans are legitimate.
So it's both sides. Yep. Everyone has to work together to make sure copyright is respected.
Exactly. And that conversation needs to happen more. We need to bridge the gap between the design world and the construction world so everyone understands what's at stake.
Bridging the gap. That's a great way to put it. The balance between art and building and architecture.
And that's a balance we'll keep exploring as we look at the bigger picture of this case.
I can't wait. But let's shift gears a bit now. Let's look at the broader impact this case has had on architectural copyright as a whole. Stay with us.
And we're back for the final stretch of our deep dive into Christopher Phelps and Associates versus Galloway. It's been quite a journey through the world of architectural copyright.
It really has. This case has really made us think about what it means to own a design, especially when it becomes a real building, a home.
We've gone through all the details, the courts, the injunction, the remand about those plans.
Right. And we talked about how Section 503B gives courts a lot of power. They could potentially stop future infringement by taking those blueprints.
But now I'm curious about the big picture. What kind of impact did this case have on the legal world? How has it changed our understanding of architectural copyright?
Well, for one thing, it really solidified the idea that copyright protects the whole design, not just little pieces here and there.
So it's not about, say, copyrighting a specific window or a roof. It's the whole artistic vision.
Exactly. The court made it clear. It's about the overall form, arrangement, and composition. That sets a strong precedent for how we view these works under copyright law.
It's like protecting the whole symphony, not just a few notes.
Perfect analogy. The case also highlighted how tricky it is to enforce copyright when it comes to actual buildings. It's not like a song or a book. You can't just take away a house that was built based on bad plans.
Yeah, you've got the architect's rights and the homeowner's rights. How do courts balance that?
Well, Phelps versus Galloway showed us that they're willing to look at all sorts of options, money, injunctions, and they'll think carefully about the fairness of each situation.
So there's no easy answer when it comes to copyright infringement in architecture.
Not really. Each case is different, and that's why this one is so important. For lawyers, for anyone involved in this area.
It's a good reminder that law isn't just theory. It's about dealing with real life situations.
Absolutely. This case is like a warning sign. Even building a house can lead to legal trouble.
So what's the takeaway? What's the lasting impact of this case on architectural copyright?
It made copyright registration a must for architects. It showed that courts are serious about protecting those rights. And it gave us a way to analyze what can be done when infringement happens.
And it started a discussion about the best ways to protect creative work, especially now with digital technology and the physical world getting more and more mixed up.
That's a really important conversation, especially as things keep changing.
Yeah.
With technology, design, construction.
Well, this deep dive has been amazing. I've learned so much about how complicated architectural copyright can be.
Glad to hear it. It's been great exploring this with you.
And to everyone listening, keep learning about this area of the law. It's always changing, and staying informed is so important for creators, for builders, for anyone involved.
Until next time, stay sharp and remember, whether you're designing something amazing or building your dream home, understanding copyright is crucial.